involving rat poison and soup, even though poison is a cowardly way to murder a man, when I stopped short. A few feet away, decked out like the belle of the ball, is Catherine, surrounded by a few of the drovers. That ain't at all unusual, since from what I've seen, there ain't many unattached ladies in Summerland, and those that ain't spoken for make a living on their backs. But what ain't normal is the look of sheer panic on Catherine's face. I duck my head and make a beeline to the group. All right, fellas, move it along. I make a shooing motion with my hands, falling right back into my attendant training. A couple turn to look back at me, but no one steps away from Catherine. They're like bees on a particularly sweet flower, stubborn and focused. Good thing I know how to handle bees. I draw my sword and smack the nearest suitor across the back of his head with the flat of my blade. Hey, what's the big... His eyes go wide when he realizes my blade is now only a few inches from his eye. Move! Now! He scampers off, along with a few other fellas, the lot of them muttering curses but too cowardly to do anything more than that. Their departure clears enough of a path that I can grab Catherine's arm and wrench her away from the rest of her suitors without any further violence. The men say nothing. Not even a single swear. And I take that to be because they're still trying to put their best foot forward with the mysterious Catherine Devereaux, fine lady from the East. Thank goodness you got here when you did. I was about to wield my parasol, Catherine says, scowling. I would think a Miss Preston's girl would know better than to let herself get so hopelessly outnumbered. I'm a lady, Jane. I would never turn my hand to violence. That is what my attendant is for. Besides, as long as I am trapped in this godforsaken place, I will have to do all my dealings in the currency of besotted idiots. What would you have me do, alienate the entire town? It is not as though I have a fortune at my disposal. I must be charming, no matter the predicament. She snaps open her parasol and gives me a haughty look over her shoulder. I can't decide if she's brilliant or utterly insane. She's playing the role of debutante so well that I'm wondering if maybe Catherine ain't really the daughter of some long-lost princess. It would explain quite a bit. She sniffs and gestures toward the boardwalk. Now, let us go call upon the sheriff. I believe he might have something for us. Try to look contrite, would you? I give Catherine my best puppy dog look, but she only rolls her eyes heavenward before marching out smartly across the dusty lane. I have to run to open the door for Catherine. She sets such a frightful pace. She sails into the sheriff's office unannounced like she owns the place. The bastard sheriff and his boys are guffawing at something, and an ugly emotion rises up in my chest. Part rage, part indignation, mostly bloodlust. What he did to me, what he's most likely done to others before me. My vision goes dark as I imagine taking my fists to the sheriff's face, pounding away until it loses shape and resembles nothing more than a mound of meat. I blink quickly, clearing the savage vision, a sick feeling settling in my middle. There is nothing I want more right now than to kill Sheriff Snyder. Not my freedom, not to return to Rose Hill. Nothing. Just the sheriff, on the ground, his lifeblood seeping into the boards. The strength of my rage is terrifying. It's all I can do to swallow my fear and anger as the men jump to their feet at Catherine's presence, as if they have some sense of civility.
"This Devereaux," the sheriff says, tipping his hat.
His gaze barely flickers over me, and I keep my eyes downcast so he won't see how much I'd like to stab him in the heart with my rusty cavalry sword.
"Sheriff, I have a request to make of you."
"Well, now, I reckon you've been doing a lot of that lately."
There's bemusement and affection in the sheriff's voice, but no anger, and I'm relieved to know that I didn't misread his fondness for Catherine. It's a sad thing, but there are few men that can't be softened by a pretty face. For the first time I can remember, I'm thankful that Catherine is fetching enough for two girls. My girl needs a better weapon than this woeful sword, something more befitting an attendant. I was hoping we could have your leave to procure some proper weapons for her. The sheriff strokes his yellow mustache as he thinks, and I fight to keep the excitement from my face. A genuine weapon would be more than I've been hoping for. Not that I couldn't kill the sheriff properly with my cavalry sword, or my bare hands, if it came to it.
You want me to give your darkie a gun?
The sheriff says, with a smirk. His gaze is heavy on me, waiting for a reaction, a flash of indignation or anger. But I am playing the role of a faithful attendant, so I school my expression to blankness. Luckily, his eyes are on me, so he misses the anger that flashes across Catherine's face before she smiles politely. Of course not, Sheriff. Jane is terrible with a rifle. I was thinking more along the lines of the sickle. A weapon designed specifically for the close combat techniques of an attendant. Sheriff Snyder's smile fades and he nods.
Hold on a moment, I think I got something.
He disappears into a room off the side and returns with a pair of sickles. My sickles. My much loved and much used sickles.
That man Redfern left these behind. If you think they'd be useful, your girl can have them.
Catherine inclines her head regally. Thank you, Sheriff. And as soon as I am able to reach my uncle by telegram, I am sure he will tell me how happy he would be to repay your generosity.
Not necessary.
The sheriff approaches Catherine, reaching around her to offer me the sickles. He's close to them would be considered decent by any standard. But Catherine doesn't step backward.
Would you privilege me with a moment of your time?
Of course. It would be a pleasure. Catherine's smile reveals none of the discomfort that emanates from her. Maybe the sheriff doesn't notice how she shifted her weight back, putting a few more inches of space between the two of them. But I do. I've known Catherine for a long time. And the last thing she wants to do is spend another moment in the sheriff's presence. But this is the role that I've asked her to play, and Catherine is not one to back down from what's required of her. She's a much better person than I am. I take my sickles from the sheriff, then open the door. Catherine exits, the sheriff close behind. I'm about to follow when from behind me, one of the men calls out,
How's that back of yours?
It takes every bit of discipline I have to keep walking, to not look back. Mocking laughter follows me as I leave the building, hurrying after the sheriff and Catherine. They're deep in conversation, him leaning in, her using her parasol as an effective barrier against him getting too close. My boots echo on the boardwalk as I approach, and he glances over his shoulder and grunts.
I dare say you're safer with me than anywhere else in Summerland. Why don't you send your girl to see to your house, and I'll drop you off after we enjoy a short stroll.
Catherine gives the sheriff an indulgent smile. A lady's attendant is not there just to protect her from the restless dead. She also protects my virtue and my reputation. Sheriff.
Miss Devereaux, do you think I am a threat to your virtue or reputation?
I would say that you are the only one who knows the answer to that question, sir. The laugh that booms out of the sheriff is genuine, and an ugly feeling rises up in me. He's looking down at Catherine like he's a starving man, and she's a steak that just landed upon his plate. It's an expression I don't care for one bit. I could kill the man without a single shred of remorse, and I'm near about to do just that when the sound of hoofbeats stays my hand.
Sheriff! Sheriff!
A man I don't recognize rides up in a cloud of dust, and both Catherine and I shrink back into the shade of the boardwalk while the sheriff strides out into the middle of the street to meet the rider.
What is it, Bean?
Bob, Bill, and now Bean, Catherine mutters. Is it a requirement your name has to start with the letter B to work for the man? I only catch snippets of the conversation, but I do hear the words breach, eastern fence, and townsfolk. Whatever is happening, it's enough to turn the sheriff's expression stormy as he sends the rider off with low-voiced instructions. Sheriff Snyder comes back, giving Catherine a deep bow.
I'm sorry to cut our conversation short, Miss Devereaux, but there is an urgent matter I must attend to.
Catherine actually manages to look disappointed. What seems to be the issue?
Nothing that me and the boys shouldn't be able to take care of, but I'd caution you to get inside of your house and stay there. Keep your girl close. There might be some trouble afoot, and I wouldn't want you to get caught up in it.
Thank you, Sheriff. He gives Catherine one last tip of his hat before striding out smartly back toward his office, yelling for Bob and Bill. They come running, rifles in their hands. All three of the men jump on their horses and ride off, kicking up a generous cloud of dust as they go. Well, that is interesting, Catherine says, eyes narrowed. I grab her by her elbow and pull her a little. Come on, this is our chance.
Chance for what?
To snoop around the sheriff's office. If you haven't noticed, there's still too much about this land that we don't know. They might have a map and compass so we can navigate once we hightail it out of here. I leave Catherine sputtering on the boardwalk and make a beeline back to the sheriff's office. It's nearly midday and the streets are deserted. The morning patrols would be out and the evening patrols getting what sleep they can. So this is the perfect time to get in a bit of uninterrupted sneaking. I dash down the boardwalk, skidding to a stop in front of the office. Catherine is close on my heels, huffing and puffing, even though it was only a couple hundred feet. I glance at her over my shoulder.
Are you wearing a corset?
Yes, Jane, I am. Because a lady wouldn't go about without one. I shake my head and walk inside, pulling Catherine in as well. She leans back against the wall next to the door, fighting to catch her breath.
What is it you said you're looking for?
I shrug. A map, a compass, anything that seems like it could be useful. Catherine's eyes skim around the room.
Well, that's vague enough.
I roll my eyes. Why don't you search that room over there? I'll go poke through his desk. Catherine heads over to the room off the main office, and I hurry over to the desk, opening drawers and peering at their contents. I have a flashback to the last time I went snooping where I didn't belong, and for a heartbeat, I wonder if maybe I should have learned my lesson. If we get caught, our situation will be dire. But I have no idea what the next closest town might be, or even how far. A map and some kind of direction finding will be vital for our escape. I also want to see if prying through the sheriff's belongings reveals anything about him. The sheriff has weaknesses. I already know Catherine's pretty face is one of them. So what others does the man possess? The more I know about the sheriff, the easier it will be to get quit of him. Well, at least that's what I'm hoping. The drawers I open reveal nothing remarkable. Rolling papers, some loose tobacco, a few bullets. There's an apple and a nice hunk of wax-wrapped cheese in a bottom drawer, and I have to fight from snatching it up. Even after days of doing nothing and eating decently in the Duchess's care, I'm still as hungry as I've ever been. But if I take it, the sheriff will know that someone has been in his desk, and him being suspicious ain't in the plan. It doesn't take long to figure that there's a whole lot of nothing in the sheriff's desk. I close the last drawer and stand with a sigh, moving to check on Catherine. I'm halfway there when boot steps echo outside on the boardwalk. I freeze, every muscle in my body tensing. My back tingles with phantom pains as I remember the kiss of the whip along it. And I know that this time there's no way there will be mercy. Not for me, or Catherine either.
Kate!
I whisper yell as loud as I dare. The boot steps are getting closer, deliberate in their plodding pace. In just a few seconds, someone is going to walk in on us, catch us red-handed in our snooping. Catherine comes out of the room, irritation on her face.
Jane, I found the most interesting map.
She stops talking. Someone's coming. Yep. Now stand there and look out of sorts. Shouldn't be too hard for you. I pluck a pearl hairpin from her hair and fall to my knees, crawling around the floor. Behind me, the door opens, and the person stops short in the doorway. My heart pounds in my chest, loud enough that I'm sure our unexpected guest can hear it. Catherine inhales sharply, and my stomach just about falls out, every last drop of dread and fear settling right where it used to be.
Well, if that ain't a sight for sore eyes, I don't know what is.
I close my eyes and start to pray, because there is no way I am hearing what I think I hear. Either Red Jack is behind me, scandalously taking stock of my derriere, or I have finally lost my mind. Some nights I lie in my bed and wonder if it was all a dream, if I really ever had a beloved baby girl. But then I remember your smile, and I know that the good parts truly happened, and that one day we shall read Shakespeare together again. Chapter 30, in which I get a visit from the dead. The voice cuts through my burgeoning terror and sends me springing to my feet. I turn around, heart beating out a staccato rhythm against my ribs, not from fright, but from a wild kind of hope that I ain't never felt before. There, standing in the doorway, grinning like the cat that got into the cream, is Jackson. Before my good sense can get a word in edgewise, I'm running across the room, throwing my arms around him in an embrace to beat all embraces. He laughs and picks me up, swinging me in a circle. When he sets me down, he leans in and steals a quick kiss, and I'm just as quick to slap him. Just because I'm happy you ain't dead doesn't mean you get to kiss me.
Aw, Janie Jane. When have I ever passed up the opportunity to steal a little sugar?
Jackson moves over to Catherine and bows over her hand like a true swain, murmuring pleasantries. I close the door to make sure we don't have any more guests. Then I turn to Jackson, arms crossed. So you ain't dead? He grins, a full-on Red Jack smile.
Nope. Your friend made me an offer I couldn't refuse.
Oh? Jackson nods, propping up a hip on the corner of the desk.
Seems that Daniel Redfern ain't the loyal follower of the mayor that he pretends to be. After you two went off, the sheriff told Daniel to take me out back and put me down like a rabid dog. Lucky for me, Daniel handed me a knife and a canteen, led me to a side of the town's boundary that is a bit lighter on shamblers, and told me to walk north for 2 days. I did, and ended up in Nicodemus, a town founded by a bunch of egalitarians.
Wait, hold on a minute now. Mr. Redfern helped you? And there are egalitarians here? I'm trying to put Jackson's words into the context of what I've learned over the past few weeks, and I'm failing miserably. Jackson nods and shifts his weight.
Yep, Daniel ain't a murderer like the rest of these folks. He's just a man trying to play the hand that life dealt him.
Catherine's eyes go wide.
Well, there you go. We just have to get them to help us get rid of the sheriff and his father.
Jackson shakes his head.
The egalitarians got no interest in interfering with Summerland. They're happy to give any of us refuge, but don't expect them to take part in any sort of fight. They're pacifists.
I shake my head sadly. Well, so much for that idea. So if you're all cozy in the next town over, what are you doing here?
Stealing some bullets. Pacifists apparently don't own guns and are terrifyingly light on ammunition. And searching for Lily. I didn't want to risk being seen again for fear of dooming both me and Daniel. And I was only barely able to climb over the wall between patrols and keep my head down as I made my way to town, terrified I'd be recognized. But if she's here, I need to find her.
He stands up and stretches, and I watch him greedily. I feel like I can't get enough of looking at him, of knowing that he's alive and still out there, up to no good. I turn as I feel Catherine's gaze land on me. She's giving me a look like she's seeing something for the first time, and I school my expression to blankness, worried that I somehow gave too much away. She's safe, I say finally. Lily. She's over in the fancy part of town. I talked to her the other night before things went south. Jackson grins.
Lily's alive? Ha! I knew it!
He pauses, and the smile melts into a frown.
Wait, what do you mean, went south?
I quickly outline what's happened to me and Catherine since we arrived in Summerland. Jackson's expression darkens.
That bastard deserves to die.
I shrug. No doubt. The question is, how?
Red Jack shrugs. Not sure. My plan after finding Lily was to make a run for the Mississippi River before it freezes, head south to New Orleans. Ain't no way I'm going back east, and I've heard rumors that city has been fortified. Strong walls with its back against the water. But there's no way we can get there without supplies, and those Nicodemus folks ration everything carefully.
Same here, Catherine says. He nods, opening his mouth to answer, when the sound of footsteps outside interrupt him.
Look, I'll talk to Daniel and Amelia and get back to you two, Jackson says.
Amelia? You mean Miss Duncan is here?
Yes, she and a bunch of the girls from your school. They came to Nicodemus when Baltimore County was overrun.
His words send a cold shock through me, and I tense. Overrun? By shamblers? When did that happen? Did everyone get out? How come you're just now mentioning this? I think of little Ruthie and Big Sue, and dread is a cold, hard lump in my middle. Not now, Jane, Catherine admonishes. We need to get out and waylay whoever is heading this way so Jackson can get what he needs. Jackson gives Catherine a smile of thanks, and an ugly feeling rises up in me. Part jealousy, and part shame, and part anger at myself for getting just a tad bit hysterical. But what did they expect? I swallow my aggravation and open the door for Catherine while Jackson ducks into the small room. Catherine sweeps out of the office like a queen leaving court. I follow behind her, carefully closing the door as she exclaims, "Oh, my apologies. Pastor, I did not see you." The preacher stands there, his roomy brown eyes locked on Catherine's bosom, and a smile that borders on indecent on his thin pink lips.
"Oh, Miss Devereaux, what a pleasant surprise."
Catherine gives the man a small smile and takes a mincing step back, putting a few additional inches between her and the holy man. "It is lovely to see you as well. Why, I was just telling my girl that she missed a very moving discussion on moral responsibility at our last Bible study." The man gives me a condescending look, the smile on his lips not reflected in his eyes.
"Yes, she could use the message of the Lord more than most here. Well, I won't hold you up. I just came by to drop off some information for Sheriff Snyder."
"Oh, He isn't there. He was called off on some urgent business.
Well, if the sheriff isn't there, then what exactly were you doing in the office?
The preacher gives Catherine a long look, and for a moment I think that she's done it. Going and running her mouth when she should have just bid the man good day and carried on about her business.
Oh, I had sent my girl in to find my pearl hairpin and was just fetching her. I'm afraid sometimes even the smallest task is beyond poor Jane.
She lowers her voice conspiratorially.
You know how easily they're distracted.
The suspicious look disappears from the man's eyes, and he gives Catherine a warm smile.
My dear, the penitent show understanding to all those beneath them, no matter their flaws. Was she able to find your hairpin?
From inside of the office comes the faint sound of footsteps, and Catherine tenses. But the preacher doesn't hear them, most likely thanks to his advanced age and his single-minded focus on the stretch of material covering her bosoms. She flashes the man a brilliant smile.
Yes, thank goodness. I have so few nice things, and if it wasn't for the message of the Lord, I'm certain my strength would have fled me long ago. Just to keep living every day.
Catherine closes her eyes for a moment, as though the struggle causes her physical pain. When she opens her eyes, they shine with emotion.
I know this is just the Lord testing me, and I know that I will survive it with His grace and love. But, Pastor, it has been a very difficult journey, and I am afraid that I have doubted my place in the Lord's heart at times.
She sniffs, not too much, just like she's fighting back tears.
I was beginning to lose my faith, but your words last Sunday and the charity of this magnificent town have restored my belief that the Lord has a plan for me, and it is majestic.
I fight to keep my mouth from falling open. She's good. Catherine's ability to play the farce rivals my own. The preacher is rapt with attention as Catherine begins spinning out a tale of woe and misery so pitiful that it belongs in a weekly serial. By the time Catherine finishes detailing the viciousness of her non-existent stepmother and the death of her father, the preacher is near to tears himself. It sickens me to think that such an evil man can feel pity.
Oh, you poor child. The Lord has blessed you with so many charms that you must believe that He loves you and has a plan and a fine husband in store for you.
Oh, I do, Pastor. I do.
Catherine shakes herself, and she forces a polite smile.
Well, I'm afraid I must be going. Now that I have my Negro back, she needs to get everything put to rights.
We've been stalling on the boardwalk for nearly a quarter of an hour. If Jackson is still poking around for whatever he needs from the sheriff's office, he's on his own.
Indeed, Miss Devereaux. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
Catherine gives him a small curtsy before setting off across the dusty road. I scurry along behind her, and once we're clear of the preacher, Catherine mutters, "What an odious man." That was quite impressive, I murmur. Catherine snorts in a way that is not at all ladylike.
What did you expect, Jane? I grew up in a whorehouse. If there's anyone who knows how to put on an act, it is a woman dependent upon the appetites of men for her living.
There's a sharp tone to her voice, a reminder that she's playing this role because I asked it of her, not because she wanted to. I consider Catherine's words the rest of the way to the better side of town. Perhaps I don't know her as well as I think I do.
Jane, I am glad to hear that you have ever so many companions with whom to while away the hours. There is no greater gift than the gift of friendship. Just make sure that those you give it to are deserving of such a fine thing.
Chapter 31.
in which I have a heartfelt conversation. After a silent walk down the dirt road to the proper side of town, Catherine and I end up in front of the house where she's been staying since she arrived in Summerland, right next door to Lily and the Spencers. Lily and a small boy play in their front yard, and even though our eyes meet, neither of us acknowledges the other. Lily knows how to play the long con. Her brothers made sure of that. Catherine's house is downright luxurious, particularly when compared to the squalor I've gotten used to. The door opens onto a nicely appointed sitting room, the small windows opened to catch any bit of a breeze. Oriental rugs cover the wood plank floors. In the bedroom to the rear, there is a sumptuous feather bed for Catherine, and a relatively clean cot has been brought in for me. The bowl and pitcher on the dressing table are real china, nicer than most anything else in Summerland, and there are several lovely dresses hanging in a wardrobe for Catherine, as well as the lady's dressing gown. The kitchen has no stove, but it does have a large sink with a pump, just like the tub and cistern the Duchess showed me back at the cat house. The sitting room has a hearth and a modest stack of something that looks to be dried dung. I decide that I'm glad for the warm weather. On the end table is a jar of peaches and a simple note from Mr. Gideon. Please enjoy this modest gift. The sight of those peaches causes a warm feeling to spread through my middle. I ain't seen the tinkerer since the day of my whipping, and I owe him a hearty thanks. Without his salve, my back would still be a ruined mess, and I don't think it's a great leap of reasoning to think that I owe him my life. As soon as we close the door, Catherine sighs and her shoulders slump. "Would you please help me get out of this thing?" she asks, all traces of haughtiness gone. I walk over and begin to unfasten the row of tiny buttons along the back, slipping it over her head once it's loose enough. I follow her into the back bedroom, hanging the dress up on one of the wooden hangers in the wardrobe, as Catherine pulls the lacing to remove her corset, donning the dressing gown, a bright silk garment that features embroidered dragons along the front. I bend down and pick up the corset, a smile finding its way to my lips. "Did you get that robe from one of the Duchess's girls?" Catherine gives me a glare that would stop my heart if looks could kill. "No, the sheriff gave it to me as a gift. Said he got this from a Chinese man that used to live here." My stomach drops as I remember the Duchess's comment about the lack of Chinese in Summerland. What happened to the man who had originally owned that robe? Nothing good. I read an article entitled "The Great Yellow Menace," in which the author went to great lengths to malign the Chinese immigrants out west in California, who apparently charge very steep rates to protect folks from shamblers. I'd only read the article because I thought it was about shamblers, not immigration. It seemed strange that in these very fraught times, folks would be more concerned about hard-working people trying to find a better life than the monsters that actually want to eat them. Catherine heaves a sigh and doesn't speak again, and I perch next to her on the bed. "What's wrong?" She shakes her head and looks down at her lap, not saying a word. I wait, and after a moment she begins crying. Soft, ladylike tears that make her eyes pretty and bright. Somehow I envy her and pity her at the same time. "Catherine," I begin, but I don't get much more than her name out before she cuts me off. "Do you know what it's like to have every man in this miserable town panting after you like a rabid dog? Do you know what it's like to have to spend weeks pretending to be like the rest of them? To say such despicable things about yourself? To laugh at jokes that cut like rusty knives?" She keeps her voice low, but the emotion is still clear. I shake my head, as Catherine ain't really looking for a conversation. "I hate this. I hate pretending to be white, to be like most of the folks in this town. I hate the way they think, and I hate knowing that my face is worth more than all the rest of me.
Well, maybe not all the rest of you, I mutter, but Catherine doesn't hear me.
Do you know what Miss Anderson told me before we got in the train car to come here?
I wish you weren't so pretty, Catherine. Maybe then someone would have taken you on, and you would have had a chance at a future.
I had a chance, Jane, but because of my damn face, no one would take me on as an attendant. I was first in our class.
Well, only because I'm terrible with a rifle. Besides, we still had final evaluations to go through, and my rifle work has greatly improved. Jane, please shut up. Don't you get it? No white woman would have taken me on as an attendant because of my stupid face. And colored girls don't like me because I'm too light by half. My future, if we ever get out of this miserable patch of dirt, is to belong to some man, just like my mama did. I left Virginia to escape that fate, yet it seems to have found me anyway.
I laugh softly and shake my head. Haven't you figured it out yet?
She looks at me and I smile.
You're passing fair, Kate. No one in this town doubts that you're white. That's your future. Your manners are pretty enough that everyone believes you're from a fine family without a moment's hesitation. You can make your way to a nice place, marry some fine man, and become respectable. Set up housekeeping and have fancy dinner parties that would put the mayors to shame.
Catherine sniffs.
But don't you see, Jane? That's exactly what I don't want. I don't want to live the rest of my life as a liar, to turn my back on my own people. And I definitely don't want to be someone's wife. I don't want a man.
I shift uncomfortably next to her.
Is this your way of telling me you fancy women? Not that I mind that. I've been distracted by a pretty face every now and again myself. But trying to imagine Catherine pledging herself to a life as a spinster doesn't quite fit.
Catherine jumps to her feet and begins to pace.
No! I don't fancy anyone. I've seen the way you look at Mr. Gideon, and I've seen the way you look at Jackson. I've even seen the way you used to look at Mary Alfred when she was at Miss Preston's.
My face heats.
Well, Mary was very pretty. And she had that amazing right hook. Mary was also a very good kisser. Taught me everything I know, but Catherine doesn't need to hear about that. She keeps talking like I haven't said a word. But I don't feel that way about anyone, Jane. I never have, and I'm not sure I ever will.
Oh, well, there's nothing wrong with that.
But that's what makes it so hard. I don't want to get married. I don't want to chase after some man or set up housekeeping with another woman. I'm just not interested. I want to see the world. I want to write my own future like Hattie McCray.
I laugh. Well, everyone wants to be Hattie. Hattie McCray's story is the dream of every attendant in training. She was the first real attendant assigned to Martha Johnson, President Johnson's daughter. They say she single-handedly killed a horde that tried to swarm the White House back in 69. Whether the story is true or not, it made Hattie famous. She traveled the world after that. Her name, Maid, teaching girls how to defend themselves against shamblers, and finally marrying a handsome French duke. Well, at least that's how the story goes. She could have just as easily been killed by some random shambler in a swamp down south in the Lost States, for all we really know. Either way, Hattie was the example we all strove for. Hattie and her selflessness, or Hattie and her fame, or even Hattie and her ability to make her own decisions about her life.
free from the restraints the rest of us labor under. All of us Negro girls wanted to be like Hattie, respected and admired. Even Catherine, who could have passed as a fine white lady if she wanted. If you want to see the world like Hattie, you can. I ain't never met someone half as determined as you are. I put my arm around her shoulders and squeeze. We just need to get out of here first. I am truly sorry I've put you through this, but you do understand that your pretty face is just as much a weapon as your rifle, right? Catherine wipes her eyes and gives me a strange look, like I just sprouted an extra nose. I lean back a little. What? What did I say? Jane? I never thought of it that way. That beauty could be a weapon. I laugh. That's because you've never met my mama. She used to say the only thing more lethal than a bullet was a woman with a pretty face. Strangely enough, that actually makes me feel better. Good. But let's not forget that isn't the only weapon in your arsenal now. You still got the promise of your virtue. I give Catherine a wry smile. The thing is, what are we going to do with all of this admiration you're getting? More important, what are we supposed to do once we get clear of this place? Catherine purses her lips in thought, the storm of her earlier emotions subsiding. Well, that is a question. I'd figured we'd go back to Baltimore, but since Miss Preston's is no more, there isn't much there for us. I shake my head because I'd never planned on going back there except to kill Miss Anderson, but now that's not going to happen. I'm a little disappointed, but the gnawing worry in my gut is stronger. How many survived that devastation? Are my friends out there in the wild somewhere now? Or are they still in Maryland? Yellow-eyed shamblers all. I take a deep breath and push my worry to the side. One crisis at a time, thank you very much. First, freedom, then everything else. Well, I think for now there ain't much we can do besides find our rest. A fine lady like yourself, well, this heat would just be entirely too much for you. You should get some sleep. What are you going to do? For now, the same. Tomorrow I'm going to implore the good doctor for some laudanum. Catherine arches a brow at me. You know, for your lady problems. Jane, look, I've got plans, and it isn't just stealing some supplies and hoping I can make it to the Mississippi River and hitch a ride south like Jackson. I told you before, that boy is all impulse. And what plan is this? Quickly, I fill Catherine in on how I'd planned on dosing the sheriff. Jane, that's thoroughly dishonorable. I ain't planning on killing the man, just turning him shambler. Of course, I'm going to kill him after. Nuance is important. That's what I always say. Catherine disagrees. You turning him into a monster is just the same as murdering him, Jane. Not if he's already a monster. Catherine sighs. I want to be rid of him as much as you, but... Yeah, you tell me that after he's taken the lash to your back, I snap. The fear and pain and humiliation of the memory rising up quick and sharp. Catherine falls silent, her expression troubled. I sigh. I'd have no problem putting a bullet in the man in a duel, Catherine, but there's no way we'd make it beyond the berm if I do that. He ain't a good person, and I ain't pretending like he deserves to live. Think about the way he's starving most of the Negroes and drovers in town, while he and his boys and all the good white folks stay fat. Summerland was supposed to be about a better life for all, but it's worse here than it was in Baltimore. Do you think that's the word of a good person? But that's the point, Jane. If you kill him, that makes you no better than he is. I'm okay with that.
Footsteps outside on the porch silence whatever else Catherine was going to say. She gives me a wide-eyed look of alarm. I don't think I can handle any more company today. Well, then, it's a fine thing that you have an attendant to handle it for you, ain't it? I jump up from the bed, closing the door to the bedroom behind me. I don't bother stopping, just go straight to the door and yank it open. Mr. Gideon is on the other side, hand poised to knock. He startles as he looks at me, adjusting his spectacles before doffing his hat in a lovely display of manners that I've seen men lavish on white ladies, but I sure ain't used to. The movement draws my attention to his fetching eyes and the fullness of his lips, and a flutter starts up somewhere low in my belly. Catherine's words about the way I look at him ring like a fire bell in my head. Lordy, I hope this foolishness is due to my having missed lunch. Ain't nothing good going to come from losing my head over the tinkerer.
Miss McKean, he says.
Mr. Gideon, I'm sorry, but Miss Catherine is indisposed. I put a bit of a drawl in my voice, stressing the natural cadence of my words. Hopefully he won't hear the lie in them. For some mysterious reason, I find it difficult to lie to the tinkerer, perhaps because I get the distinct feeling that he sees through each and every one. His brows draw together slightly.
Oh, I do hope she's okay.
Oh, yes. She's just feeling a mite dizzy because of the heat. Was there something I could help you with?
Well, perhaps. But I'd rather wait to discuss it when both of you are present. I know I'm being terribly forward, but would you and Miss Devereaux consider joining me for the noon meal tomorrow?
That's a fine idea, I answer, before I've properly thought through why I'm so eager for the tinkerer's company. His expression brightens, and he dons his hat once more, settling the bowler into place.
Fantastic. I'll come by tomorrow at noon to escort Miss Devereaux to the lab. Sheriff Snyder said that he is in the process of refortifying the town's defenses in the wake of an unanticipated shambler pack pressing against the eastern wall. And it's all for the better that Miss Devereaux remains in her rooms until the problem has been rectified.
Of course, Mr. Gideon. I wouldn't want Miss Catherine to come to any harm. There's a hidden warning in his voice, and I sense that he knows more about the current dangers in Summerland than he's letting on. He strolls off and I watch him go, his limp more pronounced than usual. As I close the door, I worry that he's pressing himself too hard. And just that little bit of concern is enough to make me realize that I'm in a heap of trouble. My heart ain't never gonna be safe. I will not tell you that I am not worried about you. That would be an outright lie. These are dark times we live in, and it is only by keeping our wits about ourselves that we can truly survive. Chapter 32, in which I am invited to a battle. Word of Catherine not feeling well gets around quicker than a brush fire in August. A few minutes after I speak with Mr. Gideon, a few roughnecks come by with a basket of blackberries that they found out along the creek, like some fruit is going to cure whatever ails her. I smile and thank them before closing the door, firmly refusing them entry. They're followed by another group of men, this time with a handful of wild onions and another with a rabbit, cleaned and ready to be cooked. By the time all of the shifts have returned, Catherine and I have the makings of a rather fine meal, and even though it's far too hot to stoke a fire in the hearth, I do it anyway, roasting the rabbit along with the onions over patties that, thankfully, smell more like grass than anything else. Once the entire mess is ready, Catherine and I eat it greedily.
the past week of good eating not quite able to make up for the weeks of starvation. Around mouthfuls of rabbit and blackberries, she confesses that even the rations for the white folks have become smaller and smaller since so many families have arrived in the past couple of weeks. It makes me feel a little soft toward the drovers for bringing Catherine their food. Most likely they were counting on it to round out their own dinner, and it says something that they were willing to give it up for Catherine. She is less impressed. Those men are just another part of the problem and willing enablers. What do you think Mr. Gideon gets Shamblers for that machine you told me about? There's danger right below our feet, and they're the ones keeping the cycle going. Not everyone is a prisoner here, Jane. Some of them deeply want Summerland to succeed, no matter what the cost. Catherine has removed her hairpins so that the mass of her honeyed curls hang down her back. She looks younger with her hair down, the shadows around her eyes more pronounced. Now that I know what it costs her emotionally to go along with my ruse, I'm even more anxious to put our plan into action. It's only been a few weeks since Catherine went from being just another colored girl at Miss Preston's to a white lady, and the change in her is obvious as we eat. She is careful in her movements, and the sound of footfalls past our door causes her to look up with a fearful expression. The guilt that rises up in me is near to crippling. I miss the old Catherine, the one I knew back in Baltimore, even as that girl was sorely vexing. I don't like this quiet girl with the haunted eyes, and I'm starting to think that maybe I didn't do her a favor after all. But I can't change the past. I can only push headlong into an uncertain future. Kate, I say, after we've eaten our fill, as a sudden thought occurs to me. I came poking around on this side of town the night before I took that whipping. I recognized a couple of the families that just arrived. They were at Mayor Carr's dinner. Catherine purses her lips and leans back on the settee. Oh, I met them. You don't have to worry about them, Jane. The funny thing about rich folks is they never remember the hired help. I assure you, my secret is safe. When a knock sounds at the door, loud and forceful, Catherine turns apologetic eyes to me. Jane, I'm sorry, but would you get that? Of course. Why don't you go ahead and retire for the evening while I make your apologies? It's near curfew anyway. The fire in the grate has burned low, and the air coming in through the open window in the front room bears a chill, the land getting cool as the sun sets. Catherine gives me a grateful look, and I get up and trudge once more to the door. It's too late for respectable callers, but there ain't a whole lot of respectable folks in Summerland. So it's with some surprise that I pull the door open to find the last man I ever want to see. Every muscle in my body tenses. Sheriff?
Jane, where's Miss Devereaux?
She's retired for the evening, sir. It kills me a little to have to give the sheriff even the barest semblance of respect when all I want to do is test the edge of my sickles against his neck.
I need to speak with her.
It will have to wait until the morning.
It can't wait, he snaps.
He attempts to glance past me into the depths of the rooms, and I move to block his view. Is there something I can help you with, sir? I ask, all icy politeness. There's something a little off about the sheriff. I don't think he's been drinking. But his insistence has an undercurrent that puts me on alert. There's no way I'm going to let him into our rooms. Sheriff Snyder, is there something amiss? Catherine appears in the doorway to the sleeping chamber, clutching her wrap tightly. I scowl at her. I had the situation under control. She ignores me. The man removes his hat and bows.
Miss Devereaux, I apologize for the intrusion, but I need to borrow your girl.
I bristle at being referred to as an object, but say nothing.
What's going on?
There's been a breach on the eastern edge that is more serious than I initially suspected. I need everyone who can handle a weapon with me to take down a pack of shamblers heading toward town.
How many? I ask, forgetting my place.
About 30, maybe 40. They've already ripped through half my patrol. They're about 2 miles away, heading straight toward us.
The sheriff shivers in a way I've not seen from him since I arrived. Catherine and I exchange a glance, and I give her a slight nod. She turns to the sheriff.
Please, take Jane. She'll be able to help you.
The man plops his hat back on his head.
Much obliged, Miss Devereaux.
To me, he says,
you got 1 minute to prepare yourself.
He stomps off without another word, off to rustle up whoever else he needs to help. I hurry back into the rooms, pushing past Catherine and grabbing the cavalry sword and my sickles. I'm about half a dozen weapons short of what I'd like to have to take on a horde, but it'll have to do. Catherine runs to the wardrobe.
Jane, help me get into this thing.
She pulls out a modest dress of calico, similar to mine, but the full length that real ladies wear.
No.
Catherine freezes and turns to me.
You can't...
No, you ain't going, I say. You're a lady, Catherine. This is too dangerous for you. I move closer to her and whisper.
Someone has to be here for Lily, especially if Jackson sees this breach as an opportunity to come looking for her. The girl's right next door. Please.
Okay, Jane. I'll look out for Lily. There's something powerful frightening about this, Kate. I've seen the wall. There's no way a shambler can get over it. If it's been breached... I trail off. The idea of all those shamblers on the prairie making their way into Summerland, stunning me into silence. There's yelling out in the street as the sheriff continues to round up folks, and I turn toward the door. Make sure you bar this, and don't let anyone in. Certain death can make a man act in unusual ways, forgetting right and wrong.
Catherine nods. Jane, be safe.
I grin. Ain't no shambler gonna put me down, Kate. You should know that by now. She glares at me and closes the door as I leave. I pause on the porch until I hear the bar slide into place. Then I jog out to join the knot of men gathering in the street. A few of the girls from the day patrol are there as well, including Ida. Her eyes go wide when she sees me.
I thought you was dead.
I shake my head. Not yet.
How'd you end up over here in the fancy part of town?
I just wink at her. Let her come up with a good rumor by herself. Do you know how the wall was breached? I ask Ida. She shakes her head.
No, it seems strange. It ain't like shamblers can destroy the wall. They can't even figure out how to get over it.
None of the Negroes milling around have weapons, which is hardly a surprise. But if what the sheriff says is true, everyone needs to be armed. I'm about to open my mouth to say so, when I remember how my concerns were addressed last time. Mr. Gideon rides up on a fine horse, the beast dancing sideways in agitation. I move over to him, even though the last place I want to be is anywhere near the monster he rides.
Mr. Gideon.
His expression softens as he looks down at me.
Miss McKean.
How exactly did that grand wall come to be compromised? I ask him. The corners of his mouth turn down.
That is a question I would also like answered, he says, his tone grim.
It troubles me that the smartest man in town doesn't have the answer to what should be a simple question, but I have more pressing issues to fret about. I can't help but notice that none of the Negroes are armed, I murmur. It would be a terrible tactical error to go into battle against the dead without the proper weapons. The tinkerer quickly assesses the situation before nodding.
I'll have a word with the sheriff.
He rides off, and Ida walks up as he leaves. What did you say to him? That we need proper weapons. That would be a nice change. She eyes my sword enviously, and for a moment I catch a glimpse of a girl that is maybe more than she seems.